This is Spectator Radio, the Spectator's curated podcast collection.
Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. It's Monday, and in theory, the day with the DUP were going to come around and back Theresa May's deal, therefore bringing with them Jacob Rees-Mogg and getting it over the line. But does it look like it's going to pass out that way? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls to discuss. So, Katie, the DUP has been letting it be known that they're in talks with the government. We all know what those talks would be. We've had Philip Hammond, the Chancellor, at the weekend saying he's not going to bribe them. However, there is a spending review coming up, and Northern Ireland will be looked into it. Is there any white smoke coming out of the DUP Vatican yet?
So these talks have been ongoing all week, and I think the DUP... we know they're very good negotiators. Perhaps we should have sent them to Brussels a while ago. And they've been very keen to update on the progress. As of yet, the government have not been given the green light from the DUP. Theresa May is holding talks with the DUP today. And that's the point where we're thinking they are making this formal offer and seeing if it is a goer. On the menu, we have several reports of what is coming out from these negotiations. So we're expecting the government to offer to pass legislation, which would almost see a lock. So it would say that the rest of the UK would stay in line with Northern Ireland.
But we've said that anyway, haven't we?
We haven't put it into law.
Oh, right, okay.
And one of the DUP worries is that Theresa May might be a unionist and say that she's not going to diverge from Northern Ireland, but you can't stop someone else coming in. Theresa May not be so long for this world when it comes to number 10, and having a different idea and saying, actually, I'm fine with a regulatory border in the Irish Sea. Let's put that up and get the true Brexit for the rest of the UK. This is aiming to stop that from happening and to really ease those concerns. The other things we're hearing about is an idea that the DUP would have some form of seat or say at the negotiating table for the second round of talks.
So, some sort of say in the negotiations. Well, what would that... Can we not just bring back Theresa May and send the DUP over to negotiate for us entirely? Wouldn't that be more...
Well, they could try and get more seats. But the idea is that they would either have a place on that team or they would have a way to feed what they were happy with into it in a more direct way.
What, is that just to make sure she doesn't mess it up? Or is there something in particular that she wants?
I think that is basically the DUP feeling that enough mistakes have been made, probably along quite a few Brexiteers over the past 2 years, that in order to prevent that from happening again, they want a front row seat, whoever is leading the party. And then the final thing that we're hearing about, which is touching on cash, and Nigel Dodds, the Westminster DUP leader, has been keen to say that no cash is being talked about. But as you touched on, Fraser, there is a spending review coming up, so I understand that there is some talk of what else they can get when it comes to that.
So, James, all of this sounds quite reasonable. I mean, making sure that the UK, not just Northern Ireland, would enter the backstop if it came to that. Having a seat at the negotiating table. I mean, let's face it, it couldn't get much worse than negotiations. So, given these reasonable demands, why haven't they come over yet? Because these assurances could have been offered at any stage in the last few days.
Well, as I understand it, the talks this weekend have gone reasonably well. One always takes one's life into one's hands at the moment when one makes prediction. And I think that, you know, the headline on our Coffee House post saying there's a better than 50-50 chance that the DUP will back the deal, I think still stands. I think that one of the problems is the DUP don't want to be rushed. They want to take time to think about things. Yet the government obviously wants to have this vote this week. And one of the other problems for the government is it needs time from the DUP backing it to then get more Tory Brexiteers over and then to be able to turn around to Labour MPs in Leave voting constituencies saying, look, there really is a chance we could win this vote if you come on board. I think the crucial thing about the legislative lock, which would basically ensure that the rest of the UK would follow Northern Ireland on regulations, is... Now, if you thought the Vienna Convention was complicated, wait for this. If you put it into the Withdrawal Agreement Bill, the Withdrawal Agreement Bill will be what is considered superior legislation in UK law. Now, I know some lawyers dispute the idea that there is such a thing as superior legislation in UK law, but I mean, most constitutional experts accept that there is. And because it was in that Withdrawal Agreement Bill, that would then trump any other bill that conflicted with it.
So in this scenario, a future Tory Prime Minister will say, right, we want out of the EU completely, and this means basically abandoning Northern Ireland and leaving it to the backstop. But I don't care, give Ireland back to the Irish. I'm more interested in British votes than I am Northern Irish concerns.
Yes, although I think there are two points here. One is, legally, because this is only in the legislation putting the treaty into effect in UK law rather than the treaty, how would the courts consider it? Which is, I think, it's an unprecedented constitutional question to which I certainly don't know the answer. The second issue is, would another treaty, would the final treaty on UK-EU relations supersede? So those are the questions. I think as well, as Katie said, what they want is they want a role in the round two of the negotiations to ensure, essentially, that you don't end up with a scenario that Katie was talking about, where basically people say, all right, we're going to do a Canada deal for GB. Northern Ireland will have some regulatory differences, but we can live with that. I mean, that is what this role in stage two of the negotiations is about. It's about kind of essentially insuring themselves, as Katie said, against any kind of leadership change in the Tory party.
Now, Katie, the DUP is one thing, but if Theresa May's deal is to pass, she needs about 75 MPs to change their minds. 75 is about the same number of Tories, not DUP members, Tories who voted against her. How many of these are looking as if they're changing their minds?
So far, it's only a handful. When you look at the Tory MPs who voted against the deal last time, there is the largest portion of that was Brexiteers. There are a small portion of Tory MPs who want a second referendum.
Like Dominic Grieve and hardcore Remainers who believe that any change from the deal would be a softer Brexit, therefore within their interests.
So that group is seen as, you cannot move them. They are not going to change their mind on this because they believe if you vote down the deal, they will get closer to what they want. When it comes to the Brexiteers, there are some small signs of progress. You had Esther McVeigh, who quit the cabinet because she was so unhappy with the government's Brexit position, so that she will now back the deal. She believes that the weight of the decision has changed, is now a political decision, and she worries that if she doesn't back the deal, you don't get Brexit. You've also had Daniel Kaczynski, arch-Brexiteer, take to Twitter and suggest that he might do the same. But there is still some way to go, and there was a view in Downing Street that, yes, you need to get the DUP on side, but then if you're really going to get this over the line, you need a few of the lead Brexiteers to come on board. So Jacob Rees-Mogg, today he has said he is thinking about it. If the DUP go for it, there is a chance that he would follow. You need perhaps Boris Johnson. That's not looking so good.
He's not thinking about it. In fact, he wrote in the Daily Telegraph today that rather he has, not that he thought about it, he said that he put it to a vote of his constituency party, a real dilemma. So he went over to his constituency party and said, show of hands, should I back the deal? And by 5-1, 6-1, they said, no, Boris, you shouldn't, therefore he won't.
Yeah, so it's very hard to see how Boris Johnson finds that ladder to climb down and back this deal. He has written today saying Theresa May should use this EU Council summit meeting later this week to not even really particularly talk about the extension, but to ask for more changes on the backstop. And then you also, I think, people to look for are Dominic Raab as also someone who could bring people with them. I think one interesting thing I've been hearing from Conservative MPs is that they believe that it would be in the interests of leadership hopefuls to get behind this deal on the third vote. Because if you want to take over the Conservative Party, the number of Brexiteers who are refusing to vote on the third time is going down. It's going to be quite a small group. And the resentment from their colleagues is going up. I think there is a feeling within the Conservative Party that this isn't a particularly great deal, but it's now time to get on board. Otherwise, what will follow is something that is going to destroy the Tory party. So if you want to be Tory leader, yes, what Boris Johnson is saying is going to go down well with the Eurosceptic membership. But in order to get to the final two, he would need at least a third of the parliamentary party to vote for him in a Tory leadership contest. And I think when you get to that point, there are some Tory MPs who really believe the level of resentment against people who vote against it three times would make that hard to do.
But James, if what Katie says is true, and I don't doubt that it is, that we're talking a relatively
just
small...
Just one opinion.
A relatively small number of people will come over, there is no point even holding the vote. Because if number 10 were... The whips will have a fairly accurate idea of this. Why hold the vote to have it rejected by, I don't know, 50 or 60?
There's another particular reason not to hold the vote if you think you're going to lose. The view in government is that Burke will allow MV3, but would not allow MV4.
In other words, I think you'd allow a third vote, but not a fourth vote.
So basically, essentially, if you say came back from the European Council with the terms of the extension, which will be predictably grisly, you could then maybe have MV3 after the council meeting and then say, now you like my deal. Now we can just do a quick, short technical extension to get the legislation done.
So the scenario is that she goes off on Thursday to the EU summit requesting an extension. They agree but attach unpalatable conditions against which her deal looks more attractive by comparison.
Yes, and then you hold that third meaningful vote and you hope it's third time lucky in those circumstances. Again, not to agree on too much, which is, always makes things boring. I think Katie is right about how people are beginning to feel about the those who are still voting against the deal. Right. I was quite struck by one Brexiteer who backed Boris Johnson in the last leadership contest, was planning to back him this time round, but voted for the deal, says that, you know, he now is furious with Boris Johnson because the psychological thing is he has compromised. So this person had compromised and voted for the deal. And Boris holding out in some ways annoys him more because he thinks that they're in the same place. It's a kind of like, oh, if I can compromise, why can't you compromise?
But isn't Boris thinking not so much about the MPs he's sitting next to, but the prospective Tory party members whose votes he literally sought when making up this decision?
He does have to get to them, though.
But if you look at the Con Home announcement, so 64 Tory MPs voted against the deal last week for Brexiteer reasons, right? So, I mean, there are 11 who I think you can put down as Remainers or EEA types who voted against deal. So 64 Brexiteers, right? Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab will both be candidates, right? If you, in the crudest way possible, imagine that they split the vote exactly down the middle, you've got 32, right? To be certain of making the ballot, you need 105. You're realistically not going to have much chance of making the ballot without over 90. Where are you going to get those other 60 votes from if you voted against the deal three times?
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store. Also, you can rate and review it. Now, the number of people we meet saying, oh, I love the podcast, to which we say, well, why don't you rate and review? Because nobody ever does. So if you can work out how to do it on iTunes, do rate and review it. It's weird how these things make a difference in the ranking of podcasts. Keen to see you move higher up. And thanks to Cindy Yu, who produced the podcast.